to take a two-prong approach. The first approach is to facilitate and make it very easy for people who are hungry in South Africa to assist in the economic, social, and cultural development of our country. So we will be making sure that we make it easy, we streamline the processes for all people who are coming to invest. Bonafide business people are coming to invest in South Africa. Critical skills who are coming to assist in our economy. Students, tourists, and all those kind of people, we are going to be making it very easy for them to come into South Africa. And the other prong is going to be just to make sure that there are enough checks and balances for criminals who we case or people who want to abuse our system, who are not coming to South Africa with the aim of what they have said, but who have other ulterior motives. So we want just to make sure that there are enough checks and balances for that. Having said that, there are areas in our legislation that we have identified that lend themselves to abuse, to our law being abused and our education system being abused. For instance, I would like to just deal with the issue of immigration practitioners, which I see have attracted a lot of attention in the media and probably in the public hearing as well. Now, as far as we are concerned, immigration practitioners are consultants who assist clients. For a few. And that has nothing to do with us. What we want to say in this law is that having done their consultations, wherever they're doing their consultations, when the person who needs the service has to receive the service, they must come to Home Affairs themselves. So we're not closing anybody's business, we're not going to be going around locking anybody's business, but at Home Affairs, we want the clients themselves. And there are very good reasons for this. We have not just decided to do this for no good reason. I will just give two examples just to clarify the issue, but there are hundreds of examples that we can give. For instance, there's somebody who was approached by one of the members of parliament, the deputy minister, and said to me, you know, I went to this place and there's a person who's running a little restaurant there. And this deputy minister was with another guest who happens to come from the same country as this person. And it was at the beginning of our term, so I think this person didn't even know this, that this other person was a different minister. So the person from the fellow citizen said to this one, how did you land up here? And this one said, well, I asked for asylum. I mean, so, but for what reason? Because where we come from, there's no reason for anyone to ask for asylum. What reason did you give to get asylum? And then he said, to be honest, I don't know what reason was given. All I did was to pay the immigration practitioner, and they did the work. I have no idea what they said, but I did get the asylum. Now, this is not just in asylum. All sorts of permits, we get the same problem. the people don't even come to our offices. They fill the form somewhere else. They advise them the reasons they should put on the form. And the immigration officer comes with a pile of forms like this, basically. And now we have to discredit those people. And one time I was visiting one of our offices, and I see this young man with a pile of forms in the permitting section. So I said to him, "Wow, can we help you?" He says, "Yes, I'm coming to get permits for this." So I say, "Well, are you looking for a permit yourself?" He says, "No, I'm bringing these forms." So I say, "In what? Why are you bringing the forms?" He says, "No, I'm a messenger. My employers are lawyers. They are in court, but they are also immigration practitioners, so I'm bringing these forms for them." Mm-hmm. Now, I just think that's an abuse of our system. I think it's fine, we're not quarreling with consultation, but the people must come. And if we want to ask questions, we should be able to ask questions. The people who apply for the permits must come to our offices. This has given us endless problems where people get permits who shouldn't be getting them because they don't even come to our offices. They end up with the immigration practitioners who in the form, do whatever, and then bring them to us. So we're not quarreling with their business side. All we want is to deal with a client who wants a service from us. Just like our South Africans do. When South Africans want a passport, they present themselves to our office. We do verification, see that they are South Africans, and then give them a passport. Why should it be different for other people that they don't even come to our office? They get a permit and they don't even know what reasons we're giving for them to get that permit. But it's reasons like those that have led us to come to this conclusion. So we just want to say we're not taking business away from anybody, but we want to have a face-to-face relationship with the client itself. And then there's another question that was raised around the, I will not raise it in the any sequence, but there was a question raised around Section 23 permit. Section 23 permit is a permit that allows a person who's persecuted in their country and they are running away when they reach a border. The law says they must go to a port of entry, report themselves, and then they are given a Section 23 permit to allow them to transit from the port of entry to the refugee center where they will declare themselves and then apply for asylum. Now, we're not doing away with that form, with that permit. But what we are saying is that in South Africa, there is no port of entry that is so far from the center, from the refugee center, that you need 2 weeks to transit from the port of entry to the center. As the law stands, it says that permit is valid for 2 weeks before you can. So people come, they hang around. In that 2 weeks, they consult, they do all sorts of things, and we really don't think it's necessary to have 2 weeks. So we are reducing that to 5 days. And we think that 5 days is actually more than adequate to move from the port of entry to a refugee. It allows you to rest if you're tired and for a couple of days and so on. So we think it's reasonable. So even though it's, I see the way submissions like said we must move it to 2018, it doesn't make sense to me why it should be moved to 2018. We think even 14 days is too long. Because that permit, the sole reason for that permit is to allow you time to go and declare yourself as a refugee center. And 5 days is adequate. So we think we should stick with the 5 days. And then there was a question also around the Immigration Advisory Board. The Immigration Advisory Board as it stands now and as it will stand after this amendment will consist of different stakeholders, including business, including organized labor, including NGOs who have an interest, and some government officials. So the composition will not change. We will not exclude any of the stakeholders. Business will be included. Then there was a question around some of the departments, trade and industry and other departments that we are now taking them away from being part of this decision. And what we would like to say is that we are not. What we are doing is just removing the names of the departments from the body of the legislation to the regulation. And the reason is that it's much more difficult to change legislation. For instance, the Department of Foreign Affairs has changed. It's now called the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. Now it means that to come to Parliament just to ask for that change if it's in the legislation. But if it's in the regulation, we think that it's easier, we can change it. Publish and comment, and then we get it done. For instance, there was no Department of Economic Development, but obviously, in the context of attracting skills for the economy, we would also need to work with them. Now, we don't want to go to Parliament to just ask for the change. No, we're not changing them, we're just saying, let it be in the regulation rather than in legislation. In fact, I should have dealt with this when I dealt with Section 23. There was an issue about that when we, the way the amendment is crafted, it means there will be pre-screening of the people at the port of entry. I don't think it's pre-screening per se, but if we follow the international law that governs refugees, it says people, if they are persecuted, they must run to the first safe country. So if somebody arrives in South Africa from Outer Mongolia and they arrive at Lavumisa, port of entry, and they say, I've come to ask for asylum and I've come from Outer Mongolia. Obviously, questions will arise. But South Africa is not really the first safe country from Outer Mongolia. It is also just very difficult to come all the way from Outer Mongolia without proper passports and everything. And Outer Mongolia might not be having any problems. So, you might want to ask those questions at the port of entry. But if somebody is coming from Sudan to Botswana and they say they've got a problem, obviously South Africa is the first safe country for them. And you can't ask any questions. It doesn't mean that you will be stopping them. But clearly, there are people who are abusing our system every day, who fly to neighboring countries legally with their passports, and then they cross into South Africa and say they've got no documents when they've actually arrived by plane in a neighboring state. So we will not be doing much screening or anything, but also we're not robots. I mean, we should just ask questions where they need to be asked. That's all it means. And it's in line with the fact that South Africa should really be your first safe country. We're not saying your first country, we're saying your first safe country, because that's what international law says. There's also another issue that we do feel strongly about, which is about the change of status. This, in the South African context, is abused to a very large extent. A lot of people come here on a visitor visa. And then within a short space of time, they come to us now, they want to change. They are now applying for a spousal permit, which allows them to stay in South Africa, because in this short space of time, they've met the love of their life, and now they don't even want to go and take it home. They now want to live here. We just think we shouldn't be abused like that. Some of the portfolio committee members will remember that when we were dealing with the Citizenship Amendment Act and the birth and death registration, there was an issue around which we were saying we want to change the law to say that we will accept the parents that we are giving for the child to get a birth certificate. The first parents that we are giving. But we had noticed the trend that people will come and say, these are the parents, and we register them as such. And then down the line, they come and say, no, I want to change one of the parents. I want to change, this one is no longer the father. The one that we had registered, we are saying now is no longer the father. We must change and put another father. They're not saying the child has been adopted or whatever. They are just saying no. They're now changing. So if you recall, we then changed the law and said we'll take your word for the first set of parents. But when you come to change, then we want a paternity test, because we don't know where we'll end. Because we might change and then the original father comes and sues us that we have given. But it was clear to us that it was part of appeasing the system in order to get a permit, because our law is such that if you have a child with a South African, you have an automatic right to a permit called a relative permit. And some people come as visitors, and now they come to change their status. Now they are on a relative permit, because now they have a child in South, a baby in South Africa. So there is lots of abuse, and that's why we are changing it. But it's clear that there may be circumstances where somebody may really, honestly and truly need to change. That's why we say it should be done only under exceptional circumstances, but not as a matter of course. why I think once more the reason, because we really feel strongly about that change of status, because the majority of people are changing their status are actually people who are wanting to appease the system. There are those who are changing it genuinely, but they are few, and those who die as an exception. And then there was the child passport issue. The child passport issue, we also feel quite strongly about that in relation to child trafficking. Because if I arrive in a country with a child and there is a name of a child in my passport, nobody can tell whether the name on the passport, in my passport, corresponds to the child I'm carrying. And child traffickers use that quite a lot. They adopt their own children on the passport, and they take the children they're trafficking outside to wherever they're trafficking them to. So we're saying we'd like a child to have a passport so that we can see if you say you are the father, we can see that this child that you are carrying is the child that you say it is. Now, I was told that some of the problems that you were seeing, some countries don't necessarily issue child passports. That is not quite accurate, because children sometimes do travel on their own from any country. And when they travel on their own, they do get given passports. They don't carry their parents' passports with their name inside and leave the parents at home. If a child is visiting somewhere or whatever, if they're traveling alone, that country will make a passport for the child, even if it's not routine. So we're saying, when they know that when you go to South Africa, you need a child passport, they produce the child passport. So I haven't got a really convincing reason why we shouldn't, but I do have a convincing reason why we're introducing this, because it's used a lot over and over again by child traffickers, not only in South Africa, in other countries as well. So, and then there was a question of business permits granted. Well, it's in our law even now that the business permit has to be in the interest of South Africa. So I don't know why, I've not understood why it's an issue to say it's in the interest of South Africa. It should be in the interest of me, if not of South Africa. So I don't know why it's arising as a problem, but maybe I'll be clarified. And then there was an issue of penalties, that they are too high. Yeah, we consider that they are high. So we do get them again when we think those are right. We will still make them more than what they are now, but maybe we will look at the actual years. And then there was also an issue around, I can't remember which organization, but had proposed something that was totally not in the bill or in the amendment, about having 80% of employees in any company in South Africa. I think that's correct. In fact, in some companies, it should be 100% South African. And we have since consulted with our Minister of Trade and Industry on this matter, and we will find a way of couching it, because we both agree, but we also both agree that in some companies, it should actually be 100% South African. In some, maybe 80%, but we will just cast it in a way that if there was a very compelling reason to have less than 80% that can be listed, if there was a compelling reason to do that. But we think it is quite right. We can't say people must invest in South Africa, but bring their own people to work in South Africa. At the moment, the law is quite ridiculous, actually. I think it just says 5 people in the company should be South African. I think that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that's a good suggestion. We will find a way of crafting it together with, as I say, I'm stuck at consulting with the Minister of Trade and Industry on that issue. And we thank the people who raised it, and we will see how we accommodate it. I think broadly those are the issues that I wanted to bring up, but if there are some that people still have not been dealt with properly, or that they want to engage us on what you said, we will be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. You did touch on the definite issues that were actually raised by several submissions. And I'm sure you have elaborated on that, and it is there to the people who have raised concerns around those submissions. Honorable Member, it's your opportunity to raise questions, clarity-seeking questions and comments. I notice Honorable Maduro, followed by Honorable Marcella and Honorable Lovemore over there. We'll take a second round of heads. Over to you, Honorable Maduro.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, some of the submissions that have been made by the stakeholders regarding Clause 15 in the Bill, Section 23, it was mentioned that the proposed pre-screening procedure for asylum qualifications is unlawful, as it violates international human rights. I'm standing subject to be corrected, Chairperson. In 2001, the department has been challenged on this policy and in court, and the department withdrew. So, is there any explanation as far as the legality of on what grounds are we saying that it will now be legal when it comes to the proposed screen? And then I also see that the department is standing very firm on the reduction of the amount of time, as the Minister has mentioned. Is there also any information available as far as the trend is concerned? The trend in those who fail to apply in time, because most, if not all, of the submission, and also from some of the honorable members, was that here there's a need for us to extend it. So I'm actually interested in knowing the trend regarding this. And then the Minister also elaborate on the application for asylum. My question is, at the port of entry, my question is, will these persons then be detained? And who will then deal with the hearings? Because as far as the Refugees Act is concerned, the Act allocates powers to the refugee appeal board to deal with this, unlike what was proposed.
Thank you.
We'll take a few questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome to the Minister. It's always nice to have you in the committee. The best thing about this committee is that you can't see people. But the good thing is at least my voice is there. Minister, on the anecdotal scenario that you've given on the corruption of the system and abuse of Section 46, you know, it's one of the challenges that I think it needs to be looked at in a much greater detail. I do believe that Section 46 should not be repealed. It's one of the sections that we should retain. One reason is that this is not different from the labor broking sector, which labor primarily tells us deals with. And you see the opposition to that. I don't think the department is quite keen to go the route of litigation and others in an attempt to try and defend its principle on this. I don't think there's really something that could not be done to try and prevent any of the abuse that you may be talking about. But that scenario, which is one incident against many thousands of people who rely on this system to assist their application, I don't think it's fair to the system and the market system and the industry itself. One of the things which was raised, of course, was the consultation with the stakeholders involved in the section 44, which the department and, of course, the health minister is aiming to repeal. Now, that's one point which I'm hoping that there's a discussion here. The other one is the Section 23. I think we should just retain the 14 days. One reason, Sebastian, is that if you look at the situation now, is that some of the centers are very far from the border. The only way to mitigate against a situation where we have so many undocumented people who may find themselves languishing in the streets of the country would be probably establishing some of these centers closer to the border, which we have seen that where it does exist, it might actually create a better situation. I remember when we visited Bybridge, we discovered that most people would come in and sleep around, and everything would be somehow a nuisance based on the number of people who find themselves there without being properly placed. So the fact that we're having this kind of an amendment, Jefferson, of course it was that the minister has said now that many people, they trust the system, they use this as a scapegoat, and run away and find themselves elsewhere very far from the border. But we've got to look at this very seriously. And at times I find that the approach is somehow emotional, in the sense that we respond because there's these reports that we find in the media. Now, on the permitting issue, there's also a litigation against the department, a class action which has been filed by Sonnenberg attorneys, which is a very serious thing. I mean, the department has spent a lot of money I think it's almost 6 billion rand in the last financial year, to try and defend itself in court. Give me the correct figure. But the amount of money to try and defend the department on some of the litigation, I don't think it's something that we want to look at. We want to deal with the act, I mean, the amendment on this bill, in the manner that will address some of the challenges that we face politically as a country. And I must say, I would never have attempted to engage the minister on these issues. And the minister, given this amendment bill, you know, that kind of insight that minister, when we spoke together, you had said that you want to ensure that we work with all the role players in ensuring that we come in with a very good piece of immigration. And unfortunately, I will not be able to expatiate on all of these areas. But typically, there are very serious areas that need to consider in this field. And for now, let me allow other members as well to contribute. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Minister. Chairperson, just to clarify, are we going to still go through the clause by clause response by the department? Not today. So are we not going to have an opportunity to engage on the clause, to engage with the department's legal advisor on the clause that's called clause responses?
The department will have to go through the...
Yes. With us. Okay, thank you. I wanted to refer to just a few things that the minister said. The first is with respect to immigration practitioners. What has been responded, in a response that has been provided to us that has come from the department, says very clearly that it will not liaise with immigration practitioners, which is pretty much what you said as minister. Now, that is not what was said by the department previously. It was said in interactions with this portfolio committee that at least one face-to-face interaction would be necessary by an immigrant or a potential immigrant with the department. But not solely doing away with immigration practitioners. Now, what we've been presented with today, the response is very, very different from that. It seems almost a policy change rather than something practical. But as I say, it is very different from what we've been told before. With respect to asylum, the asylum seekers, I understand what you are saying, and this has come up before. The Deputy Minister spoke about it with the first safe country principle. We do not have a migration policy, you well know. We don't have something that says we don't accept people that have not come to the first, where this is not the first safe country. Okay, so now we want to change this, and we don't have pre-screening, and it said in the department's response to us that basically we mustn't be too concerned. This will only apply to people who've come from countries that are not border countries to South Africa. They could be pre-screened. But Minister, then what? You say we're not going to ask that many questions, we're not going to screen that much, but then what? If you decide that this person actually has no right to be in an, you or any of your officials, has no right to be an asylum seeker, and they say they wish to be, then what? We cannot send them back if we are not sure that they might not face persecution. Putting it in there, much as you might say we're not going to ask that many questions, etc., it opens the door. It opens the door. Also opens the door for massive abuse and bribery. Chair, Minister, through you, Chair, I am concerned about the change of status. In the legislation, in the amendment bill, it doesn't only talk about change of status, which you are very concerned about. It talks about change of conditions pertaining to a permit. Now, conditions can also be the length of time that a permit is valid for. So if somebody wants to extend their permit, the amendment bill refers to the conditions pertaining to a permit as well. If somebody wishes to change the conditions pertaining to their permit, which includes the time period of their permit, they, under exceptional circumstances, after applying to yourself as minister, can do so while in the country. Otherwise, they have to leave the country. Now, I hear what you say about people coming in on a visitor's visa and they're changing to a spouse or permit, etc. there might be reason for abuse, or it might well be open to abuse the way it's written at the moment, and we have to look at that further. But including the extension of a permit, and in fact, in the response by the department, it even includes the extension of a medical permit. People who are here for medical reasons to have to go outside of the country to extend that. So when you're talking about change of status and people having to go outside of the country, except under exceptional circumstances, are you including the conditions which, as I say, include the time? Minister, you spoke about businesses in the national interest, and you said if they're not in South Africa's interest, whose interest should they be in? We all agree with that. The fact is that the legislation says prescribed to be in the national interest, not just in the national interest. It says prescribed to be in the national interest, which means we would have to have a gazetted list. That list would have to be compiled by people who know what they're doing, who can see into the future, see the needs of South Africa. It would have to be DTI, economic development, whoever it is, working together, a very, very competent team. We currently have our quota system, which does work. We haven't collected last year's list, let alone this year. So I think what is certainly of concern to us is the word prescribed. Prescribed says this must be gazetted. It's not somebody's discretion whether this is or isn't in the national interest. And in fact, in the response by the department, it also refers to businesses that might not be in the national interest. Chairperson, this issue of 80% employment of South Africans in foreign companies, and in some companies as high as 100%, is a major policy change, as is the first safe country issue. There are major policy changes. I'm not saying I'm in disagreement with it. It's something that obviously has to be workshopped. What we are being presented with today is, in fact, a piece of legislation that is substantially different from the piece of legislation that went out for public comment. And this will not go out for public comment. We are now introducing policy. Having foreigners having to employ 80% South Africans or up to 100% is a policy. And we are introducing that via our legislation with no right to public comment whatsoever. How can that be acceptable, Chair? Surely we should have public views on major changes. Chair, I have many other questions based on the written submission by the department in response, but I'd like those questions to go to the Minister, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe let me start with your last one. I find it interesting when we're dealing with public hearing, comments that are coming from the public. And I was just commenting that, yes, we like what has come through the public. That's why we're consulting on it. So why is it a problem? It's something that is what you are saying we should take, but what the public is saying, if we think it makes sense, we shouldn't take it. And that's why I did not say we're just going to put it. I'm saying we're consulting, because we're consulting with the relevant ministries to see whether it's workable or not. So I don't see why it's wrong to do that. We can That's why we have public hearings, so that people can express their views, and those that we think are useful, we will discuss. So I just find it contradictory that when we say something that has come from the public, we find it interesting and we are discussing it with the other departments, we find it wrong. But maybe you have a reason, I don't know. But I think, otherwise the public hearings will have no value. Even if people say things that really make sense, we should say, because they were not in the first bill that went out, they will not be considered. Then why do you have public hearings? And then coming to the issue of change of status, I think it's a misunderstanding. I don't remember anywhere in the bill where it says if you want to extend your permit, you should go home and extend it there. We say change of status, not of the period. So if it's there, it must have come in. Inadvertently, but if you show me where it is, I'll mark it and we will remove it, because it was never intended to deal with the time. It was only the change of status. Just read it out for me where it talks about extending.
To you, Chairperson, clause 7, it says section 10 of the principal act is hereby amended, and in C it says by the substitution for subsection 6 of the following subsection, subject to this act, a foreigner may, in exceptional circumstances prescribed by the minister, apply to the minister in the prescribed manner, etc., etc. to change his or her status or the conditions attached to his or her permit or visa or both such status and conditions as the case may be while in the Republic.
Okay, now understanding conditions and is not time. It's not the length of time. A condition may be that they are not allowed on this permit, for instance, if on a visitor permit, you are not allowed to do certain things, like to take employment and all those things. So if you want to change that condition, so it's got nothing to do with extending a permit that you have already been given. Because it would be ridiculous to say, if you want to extend, you must go. Because extension is there for many reasons. So it does not include the length. So I think we're at one there. We also don't want to send people home just to go and extend the permit. But if they are to change their conditions substantially, yes, we do want the question of screening. I hear what you say, and we will look at it. We will look at it and see whether we can accommodate what you're saying. But nobody, even Honorable Gazela, has just said we should keep the land 14 days, but has not said why we should keep it to 14 days. So that we will not change, but the pre-screening, we will look at it. Because the engagement should be, if people should give reasons why they are gay or for. You can't just say it should be kept and stop there. So if you have reasons, give them, let's engage them. But you can't just say we just want to keep the 14 days. So I am not convinced. But on the pre-screening, we consider and look at it and again. Because this is the first fight, we look at it and we respond. On the question of the practitioners, you have not given me reasons why these practitioners should be the ones that bring forms to our offices. You have not given me a reason. We are saying, let the applicant come and bring their own form, and let's talk to the applicant and see who is the applicant and what they want and discuss with them. You keep saying, no, they must be. Why? Give us a reason why, then we can engage with the reason. But it can't just be no keeping. We must be having these practitioners. Yes, let's have them, but not in home affairs offices. Let them do their work in their offices, not in our offices. In our office, if you want the service, come. They are welcome. And we are really improving at home affairs. But very friendly now. And we are going to be even friendlier in the future. So don't worry. All South Africans, when they want services from us, they come to our offices. They don't apply by proxy. They come. If you want a passport, you will come. They will treat you very nicely and give you a passport. Why? What is this fear? Why can't they come? Why can't we see them, talk to them? Why do we have to give permits to forms when we've never seen the person? And we don't even know whether the person exists. Why? Give us a reason. The two of you have said we should keep it, but you have not given us a reason why. So we are not going to keep it. We are removing it. They can do their business. We are not cancelling their business. But we are saying in home affairs, inside home affairs, the person who needs the service must come. They would have consulted with their consultants and done everything they want, but when they want their service from us, they must then come and apply for the permit, like all South Africans do.
I'm actually very sorry to call this point of order, but we are in a parliamentary process. Part of our job is as legislators. I certainly take it very seriously. I'm sure my colleagues do. We are going into a good number of weeks of deliberation on this bill. Now, the minister has just said, we are changing it. What is the point of us sitting here?
We are the department. We give it to you. You are asking our response. So our response is that we want the practitioners not to come to our offices. In the end, it will be Parliament that decides whether it agrees or not. It won't even be this portfolio committee. It will be Parliament. I understand that very clearly. But in this process, why are we here then? We are here because we have brought legislation to you, and you are saying we must not, you are suggesting we remove this, and we are saying you have not given us sufficient reasons to remove it. So we want it, we would like it to go to Parliament as is. Where you've given us sufficient reason, we'll consider it. But none of us can decide in the finality. Parliament that decides in the finality. We both understand that. So there's no need for a point of order. What is the other question you raised? So I've dealt with the immigration. And I think Mr. Sini was dealt with. The 80% I said we are consulting, started consulting with the Minister of Trade and Industry, and we are consulting. But we are not averse to being advised by the public on that. And we like the advice. That's all I'm saying, we like the advice. We will consider it, just as we like your advice on pre-screening. We will consider it. I think that's all that was raised so far. Or the business permit, you know, there are businesses that we will not go out of our way to recruit for. Right? I think it was your party or the one of the opposition parties, for instance, that was lambasting us for a permit that was given by one of the offices, I think here in Cape Town, to export his cancer. So, and we agree that's not necessarily a national interest. It may be an interest of few people, but so we will not have to go out to facilitate permits for exotic dancers. And that's part of the reason we are centralizing that responsibility, because it was everywhere. But when we have to take the flag, we have to take it at national. So I'm just giving an example of where we wouldn't think that it's something that we have to go out and facilitate. There may be other businesses as well that we think we don't need external people. I mean, probably there are enough dancers in South Africa. We don't need to import dancers from elsewhere to give them permits, unless they are coming with a troop and coming and going to give them visas, dance and go, but not to live permanently here. So those are the kind of things. When we say prescribed, it just means that, yes, it will be in regulation. Something will be in regulation, wherever it says it, when it's prescribed. Because we may say in regulations, these are the types these are the type of permits that we will be looking for, and that's where we facilitate. Because if you recall, for critical skills, our view is that we shouldn't passively wait for those critical skills to come into the country. We should actively recruit them as a government. But there are certain things that we won't actively recruit for, and that we may not need in South Africa. In fact, it may not even be exotic dangers. Let's say we had enough lawyers in the country. We might say, no, we won't recruit lawyers because we have an oversupply of lawyers in South Africa. So it's not to our national interest to keep bringing lawyers when we have unemployed lawyers. I'm not saying they are, I'm just making an example. So it need not even be exotic dangers. It can be any other profession, but if we have an oversupply, then we won't facilitate those people coming to South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Honorable Master, we would like to make a follow-up.
Yes, Jefferson. There has been an attempt to try and give some reasons. I'm sure the Minister probably didn't get those reasons clearly. Let me try and be visible, Honourable Minister. On the 14 days, the approach the Minister is that through you, Chairperson, the people come into the country, giving them the Section 23, they walk away expecting that they will get to the nearest center and be issued to the Section 22. And of course, in many cases, those people wouldn't be able to reach within the 5 days. And even in the 14 days, it was a very, very difficult process, because some of these centers are far from the border. Now, I've given an example of Whitebridge, that there you'll find that those people who arrive at the center, the first at the border, the first center might be in Gauteng or wherever, which is not necessarily there, because that one was there, which used to operate there, is no longer operational. There's a number of reasons that they gave us. Now, the assumption here is that people walk into the border, they've got money to walk into the center or take a taxi and get to the center, but this is not true. It may take them time to get into the center because they do not have a South African currency, which is rand. Now, the other thing is, these people may not be in a position to be conversant in the South African language, be it English or any other local South African language. And now in that process of trying to ensure that there's enough translation being done, or that this person is given enough space to exercise their rights, and that actually creates a problem. So within the 5 days, it will be very difficult. Now, if you maintain the 14 days, even though it was not enough, but it's better than reducing the days into five. I'm trying to give these reasons in the manner in which it becomes practical to the current situation, and of course the situation that in future we may be confronted with, given the change to this particular act. The other area is the area around the immigration practitioners. I think the reasons that I've given is that, yes, I may not have given adequate reasons. I mean, there's many reasons that one can give, but one of those is that you have these people operating, helping many foreigners who may not be able to walk into the offices. I will cite some examples here. You've got CEOs of multinational companies, and some of these people are such that they're very busy. And of course, you don't want the name busy, because everyone is busy. The assumption is that everyone will be able to go into the office, but it is not true. These people are creating jobs. These are investors who have come into the country, and without being familiar with the situation and the processes. Now, the understanding, therefore, is that you've got people with special skills and experience who are practitioners, who are experts in the industry. And of course, we're not saying they should practice on behalf of the department,
But I think Chairperson, to the minister, the idea here is to ensure that we recognize that there is such a situation that exists. So don't rethink, but try and regulate the market. Make sure that these people get rid of those unscrupulous practitioners. Because it then creates a problem, the one that you were talking about. Because everybody rocks up, they say they are practitioners, and they call themselves different names. So you've got to manage that kind of a sector and regulate it. And most probably you say to them, they must regulate themselves. But the government has a role to play in ensuring that you don't have to have another backlog of having to have scores of queues of many foreigners who may not be able to get assistance on a 1 day, two, or even a week or a month or so. Because I'm a band, the kind of a challenge that I foresee, and it's not attended to now, because we're trying to persuade one's mind and heart so that we can reach a common understanding going forward in the best interest of South Africa. The last one, the question is the area around the port, the immigration advisory board. I didn't ask a question about this one earlier, but I thought the minister would actually expatiate on this one. The challenge here is, in the list here, also if you talk about the what is the best interest, she explained it, but also if you look at the exceptional skills on the permit, and you talk about the critical skills, there's no definition that is given as to what it means to talk about the critical skills and the exceptional skills. And the exceptional circumstances, to what extent will one be accommodated? Maybe what in the office, they say to you, but this is not an exceptional circumstance. So the officials in the front line, in the offices, they may have different reasons, and of course understanding as to what it is that amounts to exceptional circumstances, and of course critical skills. But the immigration advisory board is that minister is given the mandate to see to it that you establish that board. But the challenge here is, one may not deal with this in the manner that will keep it secret to us as members of parliament as to who are those people that will form part of this in terms of the skills category. Be it lawyers, will it be business people, will it who are those people that are going to say? So I think the description of the list of those sectors that you wish to consider, it would be in the best interest of all of us to have an understanding of how this would be constituted. I'm sure I've tried my best, Chairperson, and thank you very much once more for the opportunity.
Honorable Khan.
Thanks, Jay. I think the general approach of the minister is correct in the sense that if we want to convince the department that something should be dropped from their side out of the bill, obviously then one should try and give good reasons for that. And basically I just want to take up a few matters that, and obviously with the arguments of the presenters that they had, and not necessarily arguments that we agreed with, but these were their arguments. For instance, in relation to the question of the business visas, what will have to happen now in terms of the amendment is that the department will publish regulations defining which sectors of the economy are in the national interest. So they will basically have to publish a list of, that's the way I understand it, a list of sectors that are in the national interest. Now, the argument in that regard coming from the presenters to us is that the international best practice is actually not to do it this way, but to allow individuals above a certain investment threshold to invest in a sector of their own choice. And so there's an investment threshold, and that's it, and then they can basically invest in the sector of their own. own choice. And, you know, if we want to prevent businesses like the, what do you call it, the strip clubs and so on, shouldn't we have another concept here? Not national interest because of the fact that that would have to be in the form of a list, but something like contra bonos mores, you know, that businesses which are contra bonos mores, whatever the case may be, that they won't be allowed. So shouldn't we just look at that aspect in that particular way and rather go with what apparently is the position in terms of international best practice? Then I think the point that was made to us in relation to the immigration practitioners was more that there is a general right also in the constitution of representation. For instance, every individual has the right to be represented by a lawyer. That's also some of the people involved in this whole process are lawyers. And that constitutional principle might be, you know, there might be problems as far as that is concerned. If we say that the department is, in that sense, actually taking away that right. Obviously, and it was also mentioned in relation to one example I specifically remember is you have lawyers, for instance, in this country acting for companies that are abroad, and let's say there's a CEO that must be appointed at a very high level here in South Africa, you know, then they represent those people, and whether it wouldn't then be restrictive, you know, to take that role of the immigration practitioners away. Because I, as one understand your argument that it is misused in certain ways, one might also foresee certain circumstances where, you know, there is a logic in allowing people to be represented within particular limits, obviously, and one of those being that at some point there will have to be direct contact of some sort between the department and the particular individual. So I think it was more in that sense that point was made. Then as far as the pre-screening, I think it is welcome that the department will look again at that, because the argument there was that these people will have to do the pre-screening at the port of entry will not necessarily have the required training that the people in the final analysis decide whether someone should be granted refugee status, the kind of training that they have, and apparently that is quite an involved process, you know, in terms of making that final determination whether someone's interviews and things like that, people must have schools and training and so on. You mentioned one specific point in that regard, Minister, and that related to the fact that people should actually go to the first safe country. But shouldn't one perhaps then consider amending this provision to rather make it clear that that is the issue that can be determined at the port of entry, that specific matter, and nothing else, you know, so that it's not wide and open and people can easily be restricted or not allowed into the country. Just the last one, there was also another issue that was mentioned by some of those who presented to us, and that related to the amendment to Section 35 to allow for mandatory advanced passenger processing, including the submission of passenger name record information by owners or persons in charge of conveyances. It was mentioned in that regard to us that there is the possibility of misuse in this regard, misuse of people's private data. And in Australia, for instance, it was mentioned that there is a minimum requirement for data retention, and that one should rather not have the situation as in the proposed amendment that the DG adopt measures to safeguard information. but that the legislation as such should stipulate certain safeguards in this regard, so that the legislature and not the DG would determine that, and so that the private information can be protected in that regard. It was also said, it is also part of this legislation, that a person in charge of a conveyance on a domestic flight should transmit the prescribed passenger name record information. And the point that was made is that in terms of domestic flights and so on, the Department of Home Affairs does not really have a legitimate interest in obtaining this kind of private information. So if you could just also perhaps respond to that.
Okay.
Maybe starting with the last one. In relation to the advanced passenger processing, we're not interested in keeping the data or in getting private information about people. All we want is if somebody is on the Interpol list or on our police list or on our own list, that they should not board the aircraft to come to South Africa and then have to be sent back because we are not allowing them in. That's our only interest. The interest in terms of domestic home affairs does have an interest because we have a lot of people who arrive in this country, not coming through our normal port of entry, who arrive through crossing the fence and doing all that, who may also be on our stop list or on the police list. And once they are inside the country, they still travel inside the country, having contravened our immigration law. So we do have an interest. That's why we have even police within the country, our inspectorate have arresting powers, because we do have an interest. So our interest is not to take anybody's data, but is to say if somebody is on our list because they are smuggling drugs, human beings or whatever, and they have come through the fence and not our port of entry, and they are now flying from Joburg to Cape Town, we should still be able to get them. So we do have an interest. And it's only that interest, not to keep anything, but it's just to... The APP worked very well for the World Cup, for instance. That's why the president of FIFA said it was the safest World Cup, even in terms of in the stadium. There were no hooligans who were fighting or anything, because we stopped a lot of them from even bordering the flight to come to South Africa, because we had their list. Some were on the Interpol list, some were given by various countries. So that's really bad. And we don't ask any more information than we would take when you arrive, your name, your passport number, because we just want to check against our list where we put people that we don't want to admit into South Africa. So I thought I should just explain that. That's the reason. And internally, yes, we have a lot of interest. Sometimes it's not obvious, but we do have an interest in terms of who is in the country, how did they arrive, are they here legally in the country or not. And then coming to the question of the immigration practitioners and representation. In this country, there are lots of lawyers who make a lot of money because they represent the people who are one way or the other, foreigners who basically want to deport for one reason or another, they represent them or they want this or the other. That's allowed. What we are not allowed, what we would like to stop is that a whole group of people from country A, B, C arrive in the country, we don't even know whether they cross the fence or what, they go to the practitioners who then assist them in order to be able to get the permit to say this or that. And then the practitioners themselves bring the form to us. And we have to process this form. We have no person to ask the question from if we have any questions. Everything is done by the practitioner from beginning to end. That's what we are against. We are not, but no South African goes to a practitioner and says, I want a passport, and then the practitioner comes inside for him, takes the fingerprint for him. They go, some of the South Africans use them to fill in the form and to do everything, but they take the form and bring it to us. So we are just asking the foreigners to do what the South Africans are doing, to bring the forms themselves to us. The question of CEOs and big business and all that, that's a different process. We deal with them directly. They don't even go to our front offices. And in fact, we are even going to streamline that even better. We are even going to be talking to business in the near future, arranging with them that the people they want, who are skilled or critical skills, instead of us doing all the things that we do at the moment, checking their police record for the past 20 years, doing all that, we want to say, if the company brings somebody here, they must take responsibility and make sure that they've checked all those things themselves. So when they come to us, the company must take responsibility for the information that is given to us. And therefore, we give the company the permit quickly, without a fuss, but they take responsibility for the information. Because we want to facilitate, as I said, it's two prongs. We want to stop the corruption and the abuse, and we want to facilitate those who are helpful to our country. Students, we have already started. We now, they don't come every year to apply for permits. We give them a permit for the duration of the course that they have been admitted to. So they get a permit once. They only extend it if they want to do further studies or if they fail to repeat. But basically, if it's a 3-year course, we give them a 3-year permit. So they study and not keep coming to Home Affairs. Even if they're people and especially difficult things, at the moment, they have to apply every year. We give them before. First 1-year permit. Every year they will keep renewing the permit. But our view is that what self-respecting critical skilled person would want to come to the country for the year, then every year there's uncertainty about whether their permit will be renewed the following year. We want to give them long-term permits, like 4 or 5 year permits. So that if somebody is coming here as an engineer to work in Telcom or Eskom or whatever, we give them a good period so that they are settled, they are work, they don't have to keep coming to us. And we also don't have to keep doing the same, repeating the same work on the same places. So we are going to be making it even easier for those type of people to get permits and to get there. And if we give them a 5-year permit, they stay after 5 years. If they still want to stay, they might even apply for a permanent residence. It's fine. We facilitate. Because our idea is that we should have a paradigm shift that says You are welcome to come and add value to South Africa as a tourist, as a business person, as a skilled person, as a student. You are welcome. So we must facilitate you coming. But we must have checks and balances for those who are either criminals or wanting to abuse us and so on. So that's our view. For those who are going to improve and value to our country, let's facilitate. So representation, nobody's stopping that. Every day people get represented in Lindela, they are represented if we are about to deport them and or if the police arrest them and take them to Lindela. We're not stopping that at all. What we are saying is at a point in time when you want to submit your form, come and submit your form. And we're not talking with CEOs, CEOs, you know, that's the different process than even what we call the large accounts, where companies say, we don't want to go through all these processes. We want to deal with headquarters directly, we want to deal with you directly. We do that even now. But we want to facilitate it even more for those type of people. So I think there should be no fear that people won't be represented. They will be. But we're just not asking a lot. We're just asking that they just behave like South Africans. At a point in time when they want to submit their forms, let them submit them themselves. Even with South Africans, if we are going to introduce the smart card, we won't be going to the practitioner to go and apply for the smart card. But you may go to him too if he wants to fill in the form for you because you are busy or whatever. But when you now want to come and have your face photo taken online and your fingerprints taken online, you'll come personally. And that doesn't mean that we're taking away your representation. So I don't even think it's a correct argument. The lawyers will still represent them. But let people come and see them. They can advise them, but please let's come and see them. And if we refuse the permit, they are free to represent them and write to us or take us to court as they do. And then on the issue of the border and what you are saying, maybe we should be more explicit about what we will be asking. We will look at that, no problem. But part of the reason is that a lot of the people who come here, and we all know it, are not being asylum seekers. They are economic migrants. So, if you ask those bad questions, it's not because you also want to chase them, but maybe to assist them. Because they go the asylum route, they get refused, and they get sent back, and they don't have another opportunity of coming to look for a job as they were intended to. So, the majority of people, more than 90% of people who come, saying they're asking for asylum, they are not asylum seekers. So it's also to deal with that. But we are happy to look at it, just to say. What was the other? Is there anything that you raised again before I go back to another issue? I'm sent to them, okay. The Honorable Nasella, really, I don't think there's a place in South Africa that people can help with any of the work. And there is an asylum office at Beitbridge itself. There are asylum offices in Gauteng, more than one. in fact, we probably going to meet them in Cape Town, because Cape Town is like a small area anyway. It's very far from the border. But I'm just saying, there isn't a place that is more than 5 days away. And you have not explained to me that if the person did not have money, in 14 days, where would they have got the money? If they are going to hide, from going to the border, from actually how they
with the questions that we asked. Honorable Lama, I'm not going to ask you the question because
You have raised that we need to go through the documents with the department, so I think it's better to give them time to take us through, and then you will ask the questions after they make their responses. Can we do that?
I'm happy with that. Can I, with your indulgence, just limit myself to one question of clarity to the minister?
One question.
Yes, no sub-questions. Chairperson, I want to clarify with the minister with respect to the national interest, the prescription of the national interest. The same thing applies to critical fields, the same thing applies to the sectors for corporate business. Minister, you said that we will not go out to facilitate permits for businesses that are not considered to be in the national interest, and you also said that we will not actively recruit businesses not considered in the national interest. That implies that you will actively recruit businesses in the national interest, but that you will also allow businesses that you might not consider. In other words, won't be a closed list. You will actively recruit national interest, as I understood what you say. What the law says, however, what the amendment bill says, is that a business permit will only be issued if a business is considered to be in the national interest. It will not be issued otherwise. So I just want to get clarity on that, Chair. Thank you.
Over to you, Minister.
You know, the national interest, I think it's the same as I was explaining. Because national interest is also not static, that what is of national interest today will cease it tomorrow. Because if we are short of well done today, doesn't mean that in 30 years' time we'll still be short of well done. So it may be to our national interest to recruit well done today, but maybe in 30 years we won't be recruiting well done because we will have enough of them. And we will be having a list which we don't draw. The economic, particularly the TI, economic development, maybe health, education, depending on the needs. They are the ones who give us the list, and we issue permits accordingly. Now, if somebody came who was not on that list, let's say, because it's not a national priority. But if we consult with DTI and they say, yeah, even though they are not on the top priority list, but we still need them, give them a permit, we will do so. The stakeholders will be giving that guidance. But the list that we have an obligation to give those permits. And not only to give, but as a government to actively get those as gifts into South Africa. But for instance, if somebody is studying in South Africa and qualifies in a particular field, and we find that that field may not be in the priority list, but if they want to stay and we consult the university needs them or somebody needs them, of course it will be considered. But we will not, but the permits that we will be actively dealing with and prioritizing will be those that would have been given to us as of national interest in that list that we would be given. I don't know whether I'm making myself clear.
Thank you, Minister. Could we then give the department the opportunity to take us through the document? Thank you, Honourable Minister. I'm not sure who's going to take us through the your response. to leave.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and members of the public. I will go through the response that we have given the Honourable Portfolio Members and deal with every issue that was raised by the submissions made. We try to cluster some of them like we normally do, but if whether we have left out some, please feel free to raise them and we will be able to respond. We look at clause 2 and section 1 in the Act, and the Banking Association of South Africa as well as Business Unity of South Africa commented on this. The Banking Association of South Africa commented that the extended definition of marriage is welcome, but is still uncertain about the issue of interview requests and other procedures for spouses. We note that we welcome this response, and that we will see that we clear out of these uncertainties that we have that's still there. And then the Business Unity of South Africa says that the new definition of corporate applicant and marriage respectively is welcome, and we are responding saying that the comment is welcome. And then we move to section to clause 3 of the bill and section 4 in the Act. The Law Society of South Africa commented that the Constitution of the Immigration Advisory Board, that the amendment should also provide or allow for formal channel of communication between the department and the private sector. And Deloitte and Touche says that the powers given to the minister with regard to the appointment of members of the advisory board are too wide, and Busa comment that Busa welcomes the streamlined composition of the Immigration Advisory Board. However, the powers granted to the minister to appoint some members of the board could result in unfairness if the process is not managed properly. Our response, Honourable Chairperson, is that as is proposed in the bill, the Immigration Advisory Board will be constituted by various role players, and this is currently the situation. For example, our current chairperson of the board is not a government official at all, but a member of the private sector.
I don't know how you want to do this, but it would be helpful in a sense if one members want to raise a point of clarity, do it point by point, you know.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are also saying that the IAB serves as an advisory body to the Minister on Immigration Policy and Related Matters, and that the IAB will be a representative of the mentioned sectors of the society. Chairperson, all that we are actually doing in this section is we are moving to the regulations, what is currently in the Act. It says in the Act, Chairperson, that the Immigration Advisory Board, this is Section 4, Subsection 1, the Immigration Advisory Board is hereby established, and Subsection 2, the board shall consist of the board shall consist of, and then it says, subsection 1, the Director General, the head of the National Immigration Branch, and representatives of the following departments, at least the rank of Deputy Director General from Department of Defense, Department of Education, and it lists all those departments over there, as well as a person representing organized business, a person representing organized labor, and up to five individual persons appointed by the minister on the basis of their knowledge, experience, and involvement pertaining to immigration law, control, adjudication, or enforcement. Now, all that we are doing here, Chairperson, is we are moving this section to the regulations. And why we are moving it to the regulations is if government restructures or we want to get there are other persons with different vocations we need to get in. We don't need to come to Parliament to amend the Act, but just change it in the regulation. So the composition of the board still remains the same and will be the same in the regulation. Chairperson, in terms of subsection or clause 5 in the bill and subsection 9 in the Act, Patlok says clause 5, which amends section 9, is unnecessary and serves no purpose, as single parents from certain countries appear to struggle to get passports for their children. Busa says this requirement for a minor to be in possession of a valid passport could increase the amount of red tape in processing minors accompanying adults. Furthermore, the requirement could facilitate human trafficking as it would be easier to transport children in possession of travel documents. The Law Society of South Africa says amendments requiring minors entering South Africa to be in possession of a passport. This amendment is not welcome. Certain countries do not provide for children to have passports but use endorsements on the parents' passports. Those are other issues. So on this issue, Chairperson, we are arguing that the proposed amendment is aimed at curbing child trafficking. And the details of the child which are endorsed in the passport of the adult person cannot be matched against the child, and this poses serious challenges in relation to the fight against child trafficking. There are no biometrics, no picture on the endorsed passport. And indeed, as our minister has intimated, Chairperson, there are children that travel alone. They go on trips, sports, school trips, and those countries issue them with passports to travel alone. They do not go on these trips accompanied by their parents in most cases, and they are granted child passports. And all that we are requesting is if children come to South Africa, let their government issue them passports. Chairperson, on the same clause and the same section, USA issues raises another issue. They say that the period of time for the validity of the passport could result in unnecessary delays if passports are found to require renewal prior to application for an entry permit. Urgent business travel could be frustrated, they argue. And we say that the amendment is meant to remove the 30-day period in the Act and prescribe the period required in regulation. So we are not removing it completely, we are saying it now goes as prescribed in the regulation. And this will assist in the issue mentioned by Busa for urgent business travel. The Law Society of South Africa raises the issue of the amendment providing for entrance in the Republic only through a port of entry should be juxtaposed with the provisions in Section 35, Subsection 1, which provisions provide for extraordinary circumstances allowing for entry at a place other than a port of entry. Our response, Honourable Chairperson, is that Section 9 lays down the principle that you need to enter the country at a port of entry. And Section 35, Section 1, makes provision for instances where this cannot be done. And it makes provision for the extraordinary circumstances, and therefore there is no need to have these provisions juxtaposed, as that may result in persons opting for Section 35, Subsection 1 provision, as though that would be the principle. With regard to Clause 7 of the Bill and Section 10, Subsection 6 of the Act, Deloitte and Touche, Peninsula Immigration, and the WITS African Center for Migration Society, as well as the Law Society of South Africa, commented on this. Peninsula Immigration says that a foreigner holding a visitor's permit should not be allowed to change status of that permit and may only be considered for extension. The department welcomes the comment, and we saying that the department will redraft the provision to specifically exclude holders of visitors' permits and medical treatment permits from changing their status whilst in the Republic. Deloitte and Touche says that exceptional circumstances with regard to an application for change of status or conditions on visas is not defined, and there's no procedure or guidance for the renewal of permits. We reply that the exceptional circumstances will be prescribed in the regulations by the minister as provided in the bill. The WITS African Center for Migration and Society says that the provision that an application for change of status or condition for visa permit may be granted under exceptional circumstances introduces an insurmountable barrier, and we will consequently discourage skilled migration. Chairperson, we are saying that the change of status is currently abused by those persons who enter the Republic under the guise of being visitors and then apply for the change of status whilst in South Africa. The skilled, we have no problems with skilled migrants coming into the country. They do not do those changes at all when they get into the country. It is those that come to South Africa as visitors, as tourists. It is those that come into the country in most cases saying they're coming for medical treatment, and whilst they are here, they then change the conditions of their permit. From a visitor's permit, they are now applying for a work permit. From a visitor's permit, they now apply for an accompanying spouse or a relative's permit. And that is an abuse of the system, Chairperson, because their intention in the first place was to remain permanently in South Africa. We do not see how people can come to South Africa on a tourist visa and then come with all their belongings and then stay in South Africa, and because their intention in the first place was to remain here permanently and not to visit. So if they do come and they do find a job or they do find someone that they love and need to marry, I'm sure they still need to go back home and conclude their business at home, and they can then apply for such permits back home if they are bona fide visitors to the country. The view, Chairperson, that the amendment will be a barrier and discourage skilled migration is based on the misunderstanding of the intention of the proposed amendment. That anyone entering the Republic should have clear reason and apply for the specific visa or permit whilst in his or her country of origin. The LSSA Chairperson says that the amendment to Section 10 of the Act, the substitution of visa for temporary residence permit, what is the policy rationale for the introduced distinction? The rationale from a policy point of view, Chairperson, is that internationally visas are those categories of permits that denotes a short period of stay, which means you come into the country and you are there for a temporary stay only, and permits normally denote a longer stay or a more permanent stay in the country. The amendment, LSSA says, providing for application for change of status or conditions of the permit to be considered by the minister, application granted upon exceptional circumstances to be determined by minister by regulation. The amendment in its format is bad law, as it amounts to Parliament deferring its duty of making law to the minister. The view, we answer, Honourable Chairperson, that the view of Parliament is deferring its duty to make law is incorrect, as the intention of the proposal is to allow the making of regulations as exceptional circumstances may change from time to time, and it will take time to approach Parliament to amend the law to provide for a new set of circumstances that may be considered for change of status. And then, Chairperson, on Clause 8 of the Bill, and referring to Section 10, Subsection A in the Act, BUSA comments and says that the distinction between visa and permit is welcome, and we comment that we also welcome their comments. On subsection 11, subsection 15, sorry, in clause 11 of the bill and section 15 in the Act, that deals with the business permit, Chairperson, Peninsular Immigration says that business permit holders, to ensure that they employ 80% of South African citizens, we are saying that we welcome their comment, and I think the Minister made it clear there, yeah, that we will be consulting with the DTI and other government departments on that particular issue. And BUSA says that the amendment is welcome, however a transparent process is sought on the definition of businesses in the national interest, and we say that we welcome that comment. COMSA, BUSA and the Law Society of South Africa comments and say a definition of national interest in Clause 11 should be included in the definition section of the bill, and also if we need to allow for business visa to be granted to businesses determined to be in the national interest. The term national interest is not defined in the bill, and we need to define that. Our response, Chairperson, is that the term national interest is not a new concept introduced by the bill, but is being used in the Act. The department is in discussions with the Department of Trade and Industry, and there will be a meeting with the respective ministers on this provision. And in implementing the provision, the two departments will be working together. And I think our minister also dealt with this issue, where we are saying, Chairperson, that following our consultation with the DTI, the provision will be redrafted to ensure that those, when issuing permits, there is a balance between a business that is regarded to be in the national interest and those that are not, but without allowing all types of businesses to qualify for such business permits. So there would need to be a balance. And I think our minister made comment here, when she commented on this, that there might be certain businesses that are in the national interest, like for we would need, she would have used welders in one case, that we would need welders now, but it does not mean that we would not, that other businesses would not be granted business permits, but merely that it will be prioritized, it will be a prioritized set of businesses that are in the national interest. On 11:15, Deloitte and Touche says that the amendment of the provision in business permit to provide for categories of businesses that may be granted business permits will limit foreign businesses that may be allowed and thus open a way for South African small businesses, as the industry won't be saturated with small foreign business. Our comment here is that the intention of the proposed amendment is to ensure that investment is in the sectors that are of national interest other than those that already exist. As indicated above, the proposed amendment will be revised in terms of what had transpired here in terms of the discussion between the honourable members and our minister, as well as our consultations with DTI on the issue. The Law Society of South Africa says that there is no provision in the amendment dealing with businesses that are currently using the business permits in terms of the current regime. What will happen to those businesses if they happen not to fall under national interest? We are saying that the proposed amendments will not operate retrospectively, and therefore all permits already granted will not be affected by the new requirements until such time that they expire, those permits expire. The LSSA also raises the issue that the visas granted to family members of business visa holders will not allow for Section 19 work permits for such members, and we are saying that appropriate visas or permits will be issued to the members of the immediate family, like we are doing currently. If someone is working in South Africa, you can apply for a relative's permit to accompany your spouse whilst he or she is working in South Africa. LSSA also raises and says that the deletion of subsection 3 on section 15 of the Act removes the provision for waiver or reduction of the capitalization requirement for businesses applying for a business permit. This will operate unfairly for SMMEs who might not at all times have the requisite 2.5 million. We are saying we note this comment, and that section 15, subsection 3, related to waiver of the capitalization requirement for business, which were prescribed to be in the national interest. The current section 15 deals with all businesses, hence there was provision for waiver. But since the proposed new section relates to only businesses that are in the national interest, there is no need for such waiver. And we are saying that, as indicated above, this is our final suggestion, Honourable Chairperson, that as we indicated above, the proposed amendment will be revised in terms of the discussions that have taken place here. The Banking Association of South Africa says that the simplification of work permit categories and the introduction of the critical skills permit and the deletion of the two-year limit on intra-company transfer work permits is also welcome, and we welcome the comment. On clause 12 of the bill in subsection and section 19 in the Act, COMSA comments that coordination amongst relevant departments should be intensified to ensure that barriers to applying for these permits are removed and that the various policy and legislative frameworks are compatible and not contradictory. This comment is noted, and we will see that there is coordination. BUSA says that the amendment is welcome, but regulations should be promulgated to provide for a clearer and more simplified work permit application procedure, and also that the deletion of subsection 1 brings uncertainty, as the removal of the quota system from the Act may effectively deny South African employers from being able to quickly access skilled workers. The department responds by saying that the comment is noted, and it should be indicated that the quota and exceptional skills have been combined to be a critical skills permit. Deloitte and Touche
comments on clause 13 of the bill and section 21 in the Act, that the issue of corporate permits in respect of designated industries is determined in the Gazette from time to time, that this amendment is welcome but needs to provide for transitional provisions. This comment is noted and welcome. The Banking Association of South Africa says that they welcome the amendment but would appreciate clarity on the sectors that qualify for corporate permits in order to eliminate any uncertainty. And we are saying that the comment is welcome and that the sectors will be published in the Gazette, Government Gazette, from time to time. LSSA says that the amendment of the provision regarding corporate permits and leaving the determination of businesses that may qualify under the discretion of the DG and also excising the Department of, excuse me, Chairperson and members, Labour and Trade and Industry is not welcome. The proposed determination will be difficult to formulate and administer. The provision should be maintained as is, but rather tighten control over the determinations of qualifying businesses. Our comment here is that the proposed amendment is misunderstood, as it does not leave the determination of businesses that may qualify under the discretion of the DG, nor excise the Department of Labor and Trade and Industry, but merely seeks to remove the naming of the departments in the Act for the regulation. The words "in consultation" in the provision means that the decision taken will be a joint decision. Once again, Chairperson, we are just moving that section to the regulations as, when we say as prescribed. Busa comments on clause 14 of the bill and section 22 of the Act and says that the removal of section 25 will prevent youth who are under 25 years from engaging in on-the-job training. And we are saying that, as indicated during our brief to the Portfolio Committee, this permit is being abused, Chairperson, certain sectors of the industry that should not be having or getting people, like the exotic dancers, for instance, the local, the cross-border removal of 25. I'm sorry, Chairperson. No. It's not. Sorry, Chairperson. We were just conferring on the right permit. It is 22B that talks about the youth under 25, and we are saying that the requirement for an exchange permit still remains, and it was always meant, the exchange permit was always meant to be for programs, participating in programs of cultural, economic, and social exchange. On 1523, clause 15 of the bill, section 23 of the Act, COMSA, LSSA, PASOP, and the WITS African Center for Migration and Society comments that the validity period of the asylum transit permit be retained at 14 days. Chairperson, I'm not sure, should I go through this? I think this was adequately discussed. And if there are some other issues, we will deal with it. So I am jumping to page... Also, the pre-screening process, Chairperson, I think the earlier discussion had said that we will relook that issue and deal with it according to the discussions that took place here. So it takes me to page 19. Then on page 19, with regard to clause 18 of the bill and section 27 in the Act, COMSA says that a definition of prescribed to be in the national interest to be provided in the definition section. And we had already commented under clause 11 of the bill how we will deal with that. And also they comment on section, on clause 19 of the bill in section 29 of the Act, that the amendment is welcome as it will bring the Act in line with recently enacted human trafficking legislation, and we are saying that we welcome this comment. Lawyers for Human Rights comments on the APP. Chairperson, the comment is that should the APP system go ahead, further legislation should be enacted to ensure that the system meets international standards and there is adequate data protection measures in place. Indeed, we agree with this. And we are saying that the South African APP system is in full compliance with ICAO standards and recommended practices. And that Parliament is currently considering the Protection of Personal Information Bill. And the objectives of the PPI Bill are, amongst others, to promote the protection of personal information processed by public and private bodies, to introduce information protection principles so as to establish minimum requirements for the processing of personal information, to provide for the establishment of an information protection regulator, to provide for the issuing of codes of conduct, to provide for the rights of persons regarding unsolicited electronic communications and automated decision making, and to regulate the flow of personal information across the borders of the Republic. And that we argue, Chairperson, that this bill, well, we, when it becomes an act, will take care of personal information issues with regard to the APP and the need for PNR information. On section, BUSA says, with regard to the same section in the Act, that the introduction of the advanced passenger processing and passenger name record is welcome, and we welcome their comment. The LSSA and the Lawyers for Human Rights comment that the amendment providing for APP on conveyances, and these conveyances are not defined, could include private vehicles on land which might not have the required equipment for APP, and the requirement found in section 35 subsection 3A for domestic airlines to transmit electronic passenger lists should be removed, and also that APP on domestic flights may raise constitutional issues and has an impractical legislative purpose. Our response, Honourable Chair, is that the Act contains a definition of conveyance. If we go to the Act, which we are amending with this amendment, conveyance means any ship, boat, aircraft, or vehicle, or any other means of transport. So it is in the definition of the Act that we are trying to amend, Honourable Chair. We are saying that the conveyances will be subject to APP, will be prescribed, and the DHA is planning to roll it out to aviation and maritime conveyances as well. And it is PNR and not APP that is needed for domestic flights to get a more complete profile on the person, and is in line with our risk-based approach to immigration. The information will be used to track persons who are on the set stop list, who enter the Republic illegally, and then use domestic flights. Furthermore, the information will be used to detect persons who overstay in the Republic after the expiry of their permits, and that the department is the recipient of traveler data for conveyors on behalf of the JCPS departments, who require the information for criminal investigative purposes in the context mentioned above. And then, Chairperson, on clause 23 of the bill in section 46 of the Act, I think this is all, it deals with the immigration practitioners. I think that has also been adequately dealt with and argued here, Chairperson. I will move with, if it is okay, Chairperson, and then move on to page 26, clause 24 of the bill in section 49 of the Act, which deals with the penalties. And Chairperson, indeed we took the comments of all the participants, and we are in agreement that we could have been too harsh here, Chairperson, and that what we are doing is we are reviewing these penalties that our minister has said, and we will come back with the reviewed penalty. So I'm not going to go through all of them, and then I go to page 29 of the document, and paragraph 5 of the memo on the objects of the bill. PASOP says that there are no financial implications, even though long jail terms and additional staff needed to assess people's asylum claims at the borders will easily accumulate to several million rands a year. And we are saying that we are relooking, as we said, the issue of pre-screening, and that it is not for the department to budget for prisons, and further, it is not easy to predict how many people are going to contravene the law. On page 30, subsection 1 and 18 of the Act, these were just general comments made by participants, Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, and it deals with the relative permits and life partnerships. Peninsula Immigration says that foreigners getting married in South Africa must show proof that he or she is not married in the country of origin, and that a holder of a relative or life partner permit should only be eligible for permanent residence after 10 consecutive years. We are saying that the comment on lawful impediment is welcome, and it is part of the proposals being considered by the department with regard to the review of the Marriages Act of 1961. However, the department is already enforcing this principle of law through administrative measures, and compliance is satisfactory. Peninsula Immigration also comments generally that no foreigner should be granted South African citizenship. Our response is that this proposal amounts to a major policy shift for the Republic and therefore requires thorough discussion at cabinet level before being brought forward to Parliament. COMSA also makes a general comment saying that section 39 should be further amended to explicitly indicate that learners enrolled for basic education should not be denied access. We respond by saying that this proposal will require discussion with the Department of Basic Education, as the provision of education is not the mandate of the department, and therefore the department cannot make a decision with regard thereto. This is an issue that involves the Bill of Rights. Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the portfolio.
Thank you, Mr. McKay. Questions from members. I note Mr. Honorable Gum, followed by Honorable Lovemore, and Honorable Marcella, we will be the last.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just a few matters. On the first page, it was mentioned there that with regard to the constitution of the board, that the amendment as such
should provide for a formal channel of communication. I don't think that you answered that part, because it actually says that there should be a provisions in the bill dealing with that formal channel matter. So if you could just respond to that. Then I think there was the argument pertaining to the child passport matter that was raised and that you captured here. It says that furthermore, this new requirement of passport could facilitate human trafficking, as it would be easier to transport children in possession of travel documents. I think that you did not answer that particular issue. You could just respond to that allegation, actually, or an argument that these new provisions would facilitate human trafficking. Then, on page 5, I think the point there is, you do discuss it somewhere else, that the exceptional circumstances might change and so on. But I wonder whether, you know, I mean, with regard to national interest and so on, one could perhaps accept that argument that national interest, which businesses are in the national interest, would change from time to time. But I don't know whether that same argument really applies to exceptional circumstances. And I think the point that is made is that these are things that should rather be dealt with in the legislation, so that Parliament can decide whether we agree with these exceptional circumstances, whether they are too wide, too narrow, whatever the case may be. So, although you say it will be prescribed in regulations, I mean, is that the best way of dealing with it? Shouldn't Parliament be the institution that actually determine what these exceptional circumstances should be, and therefore shouldn't it be provided for explicitly in the legislation? Then, pertaining to the matter of on page 6 this time, still with regard to exceptional circumstances and the fact that the change of status might then happen under these circumstances, it was indicated earlier that the way the provision in the bill actually reads is it speaks also to the conditions of the permit. Now, at that point in time, the minister indicated that, you know, the extension of the time of the permit is not really one of the conditions. But, you know, is there some specific provision in the Act then, whatever, that makes it clear that we are not referring to the extension of the time of the permit? Because I am a bit concerned that the word conditions may be interpreted by a court, for instance, as also, or by the department, as also referring to the extension as far as the time is concerned. So I'm a bit concerned about that one from a legal perspective. Then, I get the sense sort of that in essence one will need, and you might differ as far as that is concerned, but if you want to prescribe what national interest is, then you'll have to have a list of businesses that you regard to be in the national interest. And what might then happen is that you might miss certain businesses that are actually also important to have in South Africa. So, you know, is this really the best way of going about with this whole issue, to have a list defining businesses that are in the national interest, given the fact that you can actually miss out on certain businesses that we actually need. Because what you are going to require DTI, you know, to provide this information and so on, and you may amend it from time to time, but you know, in between there might be some businesses that we actually need in this country, and then we miss out on opportunities as far as that is concerned. I'm just not sure, you know, I mean, it's almost as if we're trying to deal now with the strip clubs and so on, and trying to exclude them, and you know, should that really be our focus? Can't one define that whole matter in a different way to make sure that those kinds of businesses are excluded, but without now, you know, putting limitations as far as other businesses are concerned, where people can do a substantial capital investment, then, or it's an investment in terms of skills that they're providing, whatever the case may be. I'm still not, you know, personally, I only speak for myself at this juncture, but I mean, I'm not dead sure whether this is really the best way to deal with it. And I mean, it is then also further explained in one of your comments on page 9 that one shouldn't, you know, allow all types of businesses. Now, obviously, as I referred to, I think one can define it in a way that would exclude the strip clubs and so on. But, you know, why wouldn't one, if there's a market here in South Africa for a particular business or a need for particular skills? We're referring to businesses here, not individuals, but businesses here. If there's a market here for those businesses, especially if we're going to put in a requirement of, let's say, 80% or whatever that they employ must be South Africans, you know, aren't we, you know, why should one actually try and exclude certain businesses? It would, to a large extent, be the South African market that will determine whether they will stay or will survive or not, you know. And then it says, on page 10 you say that appropriate visas will still be issued to members of the immediate family. And I was just wondering, you know, whether there is explicit provisions in this bill or in the Act that makes provision for that. It shouldn't just be a question of practice. I mean, the minister also indicated earlier that there will also be permits issued in certain circumstances where the national interest is not necessarily served, you know, by the particular business, but the law as it stands at the moment says something different. You know, so is this stated somewhere, the question of appropriate visas will be issued to members of the family, or is it sort of, do you want to deal with it as a matter of practice or something like that? Because then we're on a bit of dangerous territory as far as that is concerned. The other matter that hasn't really canvassed that well, yes, this afternoon as well, I don't think any one of us mentioned it, but there was clear criticism as far as, now, you know, talking of critical skills instead of the previous terminology, exceptional skills and so on, even if it's a stricter kind of requirement now, critical skills, you know. What exactly is the motivation for that amendment, and isn't that going to be a bit of a more stringent requirement than exceptional skills and so on, you know, the previous requirements? I'm almost done, Chair. Then on page 13, you say, you note the comment and welcome it with regard to transitional provisions, but the point that's been made here is that there should actually be transitional provisions in the bill. And when we look at your amendments that you propose, you say none, you know. So you say you welcome this suggestion, but so where are our transitional provisions now in the bill? You know, you're not suggesting any as far as that is concerned. Then once again, with regard to the removal of section 22B with regard to the youth under 25, it once again almost seemed to me that, you know, you say it's misused, and the example you mentioned was once again these exotic dancers. Is there not another way of dealing with this, you know, without having to just remove this provision? Because it is a nice thing, I think, to have that, you know, you have this kind of permits and so on for under 25s. I mean, I suppose other countries also have it. So aren't we trying to deal with the exotic dancers and then in the process kill the whole, kill something that is actually not such a bad idea at all? Okay, I think that's all.
Honorable Lasmo, could we maybe afford the department to respond, then we will come after that, because it's a marathon of questions that Honorable Gam has asked.
Thank you, Chairperson. The legal team here will also assist me in answering some of these questions. Maybe I should start with the easier ones that I think I can deal with. Not easier because they're not complicated, but I think that I understand they will deal with the more complicated ones. With regard to the business permit, if you go to our Act, and you go to Act, I'm talking now with regard to the accompanying, those that accompany people with a business permit. It's explicit, you will see in section 15, Honourable Member, it talks that a business permit may be issued by the Director General to a foreigner intending to establish or invest in, or was established or invested in a business in the Republic in which he or she may be employed. And an appropriate permit for the duration of the business permit to the members of such foreigner's immediate family. So that is adequately dealt with in the Act. With regard to the 25-year-olds, Honorable Gao, we are saying, why can't they apply for work permits? You can apply for a work permit if you are 25 years old. If you are a major, you can apply for a work permit. So why this special dispensation for 25-year-olds? So if they need to come, doesn't matter. If they are 25 years, they could apply for a work permit. Also on the conditions of a permit, Honourable Member, it does not include the time period. The conditions talk to issues of what you can or may not do when you are a holder of such a permit. And if we read the Act in section 11. Of this, which talks to a visitor's permit, it says here, a visitor's permit may be issued for any purpose other than those provided for in sections 13 to 24, that would be work permits and all other permits. And that such a permit may not exceed 3 months, and upon application may be renewed by the Director General for a further period which shall not exceed 3 months. So it talks to the period that it needs to. So we don't view at the department that the period or the time frame of a permit is a condition, for instance, or a change of condition. In this case, Honourable Member, we are talking about people coming in and say, again, I'm accentuating this, people coming in saying they're coming as tourists or as visitors to the country. But when they get in, they change the condition. The condition and status of the permit means it's no more a visitor's permit that you are having. You are now applying for another permit. It's a change of status. You are now applying for a business permit, or you are applying for a study permit, or you are applying for a work permit. That's a complete other permit. They are welcome to change the time that they are here. They could say, I'm here for 3 months, I need a further 3 months. That's not a condition of the permit, and they can do that on one occasion only. So here it is, or you come in with a work permit that gives you a certain condition that you can only work for a particular company. And you now come in and you change that condition of that, where you now say, I want to change it, I want to work for another company that is in South Africa. So those are the conditions that we are talking about, and the status change that we are talking about. And we are saying that that can't be allowed to take place in the country. Under exceptional circumstances, yes, and those exceptional circumstances could be where you have someone that is studying in South Africa, studying to be a lawyer, for instance, now requesting to do his articles here, or requesting to work in South Africa, or a engineer that has completed his studies, found a job and wants to work here, from a study permit to a work permit, we would look at. We are specifically looking at here, Honourable Member, through you, Honourable Chairperson, to limit this to the change of status from visitor's permits to any other permits, and medical permits to any other permits, that we would limit it to those types of permits. So it should not, the comments made here by the input that was given by the organization, it should not affect skills or the transfer of skills to South Africa, because these are not the people that abuse, that do that change at all. Could you please take on?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, I will take some questions, and my other colleagues will also assist. Perhaps the issue of the formal channel of communication, we will look at it, because as it is, the Immigration Advisory Board consists of various sectors, and those sectors represent the business sector, for example, the organized labor, where there are issues that relate to immigration matters, and there is a need to look at them. They source their own sort of consultations, they have their own consultations, then the input can come through those channels. But if we need to prescribe how members of the private sector could channel in inputs, I think that will have a discussion on, because that's not how we sort of understood the comment in the way in which the board currently looks at matters. And the issue of the child passport, as it is now, the comment from Busa says, if we allow a child to have his or her own passport, we might be allowing child trafficking. And on the other hand, we say, if a child doesn't have a passport of his or her own, it also allows or facilitates child trafficking. You look at it both. It gives you what you may have if completely don't have the details of the biometrics of a child. But on the other hand, says you may have the biometrics of a child, but then the person who accompanies the child, if the child is accompanied, might be someone trafficking the child. There will be checks and balances in terms of making sure that a child obviously is a minor. Where a child is being accompanied by another person, there will be verification in terms of details. And obviously we're using APP already. The airlines already, if a child, I mean, whenever any passenger comes through, there will be information that will be given, and we'll check in terms of who is the person coming to us. If there's a child, we'll apply measures to make sure that the person accompanying the child is so and so. If not accompanied, also will check where is the child going, who's going to be the recipient person, because remember, part of the requirement is the, I think DDG will explain on this, that whenever a person comes into the country, there's probably going to be, there is going to be a reintroduction of the traveler, we call it the traveler card, the lending card, in terms of where will you be in the Republic, because it's currently part of the law. It was just not being implemented for some time.
If I may, thank you, Chairperson. What we are saying as a department is, Busa could be correct, but at least you would be able to trace the child, and you'd be able to have biometrics and to go on, and you'd be able to have a track record of the child having entered your country. Currently, there's none. If the child comes with parents, they come in, it's registered as a child in the parents' passport. We have no biometrics and no trace of that child coming in. There's a stamp in the parents' passport, if those are the parents of the child. And the child comes in and we have no record of that. If the child carries his or own passport, we would be able to have a track, a trail of the child coming into the country. And if that child has been trafficked, we would be able to have a place to start with some investigations. Currently, if that is not the case.
Thank you. Going back to the issue of national interest, I think we, looking at what we said as the final suggestion, we said we are going to revise the section in the way in which it is being drafted, based on the comments that, for example, given the Peninsula immigration saying we should prevent holders of visa payments, and as DDG explained, so the provision will be revised. It won't, when we present the provision, it will not be in the current format as it is, after taking into account the discussions that we've had also today. And also with regard to the issue of national interest in general, also as it applies to Section 15, we are in discussion with the Department of Trade and Industry in terms of looking at the way in which we could take into account the inputs made and just revise it based also on saying we'll create a balance between those companies that are of the national interest. And in our discussions as we're preparing for this, we'll say for DGLs also need to currently, for example, in the current processes, what are those companies that they do not recommend that we issue payments to. So they'll be giving us a complete list in terms of currently these are companies that we do not recommend as DTI, but these are the companies. For example, we are busy in the current regulations, there are a list of sectors wherein they are regarded to be of national interest, but then the list keeps on changing. As we were discussing last December, revising the regulations, there is a whole new list. I think it goes, currently we've got about 8, but now it's more than 8, it's about 12. So it keeps on changing. That's why I would say we're going to revise the section, because as it appears now, it's more limiting. But based on the comments received and the consultations that we're having with DTI, we consulted them. We're still finalizing some details in terms of how can we rephrase the issue. Also take into account the removal of the Section 15.3 that talks about the waiver of capitalization. We've noted the inputs made, and we'll say when we revise the entire provision, those will be taken into account, and for sure when we present next time to the committee, we'll have formulated the wording. Also, we'll consult with the state law advisors in doing that. The issue of critical skills, I don't know if DDG would like to take that.
Honourable Member, we view critical skills as wider than exceptional skills, or what's the other term? Exceptional and So a critical skill might not be an exceptional skill. We might need plumbers, which might not be a critical skill, but might not be an exceptional skill. So we are saying that the exceptional that the critical skills could include any of these other skills that we need, and it's a broader definition than exceptional skills. Thank you, Chair.
circumstances, I think that one we need to. Have we answered all?
There's one outstanding.
Chair, just with regard to the exceptional circumstances, the scenario that was raised there by the Honourable Member, I think what we're trying to do here as well is to, exceptional circumstances can change as we go on, and I think it's more or less the same argument as we have had with the national interest. And my problem is, if you put the exceptional circumstances within the legislation, if it changes later on down the line, because sometimes things change, as I say, I don't know if you're going to say maybe an accident here or whatever. There might be a specific exceptional circumstance that would relate to change of status. You've got it in the regulations, you can amend the regulations rather than come back to Parliament and amend the bill to include one exceptional circumstance that we've picked up going forward. So I think that's the rationale behind that. Thanks, Chair.
Are we done with all the questions? Honourable Lovemore?
Thank you, Chairperson. Many of mine overlap with Honourable Gowan, so I certainly won't repeat those. Chair, just a comment. I'm very intrigued by the responses that are made by the department. CDE put in the most damning submission. CDE's response was this piece of legislation must go back for redrafting. And that is the only responsible decision that this committee can make. Not a single response was made by the department to CDE. Not one. Which is rather interesting. Peninsula Immigration, I don't wish to cast aspersions on them. I don't know anything about their credentials. But they came in and made some very sweeping statements based on not much research, and the department has decided to incorporate those. I found it very strange. Also, the Law Society of South Africa. These are highly qualified, highly respected lawyers practicing in the field of immigration. We have entertained them as part of our committee for exactly that reason. Everything that the Law Society of South Africa has stated here has been noted by the department and no amendments have been made. I find it absolutely amazing. I find it a dismissive, abusive attitude towards the Law Society, Edward Nathan Sonnenberg, the biggest law firm in Africa. Has no cognizance has been taken of an excellently researched submission. So it is quite astounding. The one concern that I do want to echo with my friend here is the transitional provisions. There are no transitional provisions. It is said that the provisions in this bill will not be retroactive or retrospective or whatever, that, you know, they will not apply to a business until, or to a permit or whatever, until that permit expires. And then what? And then what? There are no transitional provisions. This is a serious, serious problem. I believe we have a number of serious problems here, and I'm repeating my view because I believe it is worth repeating on the fact that we are making sweeping policy changes here. Sweeping policy changes. Putting it in a piece of legislation, the Minister said that we have had public consultation. We have on the previous piece of legislation. We are now bringing back a substantially changed piece of legislation with sweeping policy changes in that piece of legislation. There will be no public consultation on that. And I really would like Mr. McKay to comment on that. The Minister says we're not averse to the public making comment. How will you receive it? How will you invite it? How will they participate in these policy changes? Will there be a regulatory impact assessment on this bill? There are assertions that it is going to cost money. There are assertions, the Minister, for instance, says we're not, or your department says you're not responsible for the building of prisons to hold those people that you put in prison for however many years. Well, you are if you make this law. So, I mean, certainly, surely that should come into a regulatory impact assessment. Is it going to be done? When is it going to be done? I understand that it is a requirement. Chairperson, we constantly, all of us, are constantly referring to the regulations.
this will be removed from the law and put into the regulations. That's exceptional circumstances will be explained in the regulations. Critical skills, national interest, everything is going to be described in the regulations. The fact is, Chair, that we as a committee are working in what is in effect a legislative vacuum. We've got a bare framework in front of us, and we're saying, okay, you guys go ahead, put it in regulations. We have no input in that, none at all as a committee, unless we put a clause in this legislation that it has those regulations, in fact, have to come back to the committee. We are giving the department a blank check, and I'm afraid that on what they've presented to us today and previously, they don't deserve it, and Parliament should never do that. So I really have such major reservations about this, Chair. But as I say, I'm not going to repeat questions. While I'm looking for my first question, I want to please ask the Department not to relabel themselves as the Department of Moral Regeneration or something. We're not here to take the moral high ground. We're not here to keep strippers out of the country. If it's a business, it's a business, for goodness sake. If there's a market, there's a market. But it's not the Department of Home Affairs' mandate to keep strippers out of the country. I've never been to a strip club in my life. Let's set the record straight on that. But nevertheless, there is a market, quite clearly. And it certainly is not your mandate. The regulations, when will they be published? We should be considering the regulations in conjunction. We should have the bill on one side and the regulations on the other. We should be considering them in parallel, certainly not leaving them to be published at a later stage. And as I say, in the form of, and going through this bill in the form of a blank check. The national interest, as you say, has to be further assessed. There are conflicting messages coming. The legislation as it stands, or the bill as it stands before us, says that businesses will only be allowed if they are in the national interest. The minister says otherwise, well, maybe if they're not in the national interest. You're talking about waivers of capital requirements for businesses, and you say that only pertains to businesses in the national interest. Well, those are the only business permits that are going to be issued. So no SMMEs are going to be established in South Africa by foreigners, certainly. Maybe we need them. Maybe that's also in the national interest, but the waiver is going to preclude them. So that certainly needs serious attention. But you have said that you will come back on that. I would like clarity on what is the process for. You're going to redraft certain sections, and then you're going to come back. When will that be? Will it be before we deliberate, etc.? Chairperson, on page 12, the comment by the department is on the exceptional skills. It says that the comment is noted. It should be indicated, the comment by Busa on exceptional skills being taken out. It should be indicated that the quota and exceptional skills have been combined to be a critical skills permit. That received much criticism. The fact that that in fact the quota and exceptional skills have been combined to be a critical skills permit was substantially criticised. The criticism has not been addressed, and certainly should be. The corporate permits and the sectors, clarity we need on who's going to determine those sectors. Will you be able to get a corporate permit? Same thing as the national interest if you are not part of the sector. The permit for the under 25, the exchange permit, it was said by the DDG that it's meant to be for participating in cultural, social, and economic exchange. It was also then said by the DDG, why don't they apply for a work permit? Well, if they're coming here for cultural exchange, they wouldn't be working. They might just be exchanging cultures. So, but the under 25 permit actually would allow them to do that. The point was made by Puzzle, I think it was Puzzle, but I might be mistaken. But nevertheless, it was made that many of the people who come on the under 25 permit actually are of great value to our to South Africa, because they work with underprivileged communities, and they do a lot of very good work there. It would be stopped. But they work on a volunteer basis, not a work permit that they would be looking for. The pre-screening we've spoken about, and I look forward to seeing a substantially redrafted section on that. Chairperson, with respect to the advanced passenger processing, or the I don't know what PNR stands for, but nevertheless, I presume it's something record or some whatever. But
passenger name record.
The DDG read out the definition of conveyances, which ends in any other means of transport. So he has not, in fact, addressed the concern, or any other means of transport can include a public vehicle or a taxi, for that matter. So expecting every taxi driver to submit passenger lists is not realistic. The SAP stop list, is it really Home Affairs? I don't really know. That's not serious to answer that now. I think the others are more critical. I'm interested, you know, when you have these passenger lists and you now detect people who overstay in the Republic, and then what? You've got a list that shows they caught a plane from Cape Town to Durban, and then what? You know they might be in Durban or surrounds? And we haven't got enough immigration officials. How are you going to catch them? I don't get it. Section 46, I liaise with the department on behalf of people. I liaise with the department every day. People need people to liaise on their behalf with the department. Every person that comes to me is desperate because they're not getting help from the department. I think the department has to realize that the fact that there are so many successful immigration practitioners in this country attests to the need for their services. And doing away with them, refusing to deal with them, is definitely going to be a barrier to immigration. There is absolutely no doubt. Chairperson, I'm almost done on sentences. It has been proven I'm not an expert on criminology or anything to do with sentences, etc. But certainly from what I've read, it has been found worldwide. The deterrent to crime exists in a very high level of confidence, first of all in being detected and caught, arrested, convicted, detained. A very high level of confidence of that happening. The length of the sentence does not matter. The fact is that there must be a high level of confidence. There isn't in South Africa. There isn't. You need to look at how you're going to increase the level of confidence. If I abuse your system, then I'm actually going to get caught. Rather than having these incredible sentences. I just want to come back to page 29 when you say it is not for the department, this is on budgets, and the cost implications. You say it is not for the department to budget for prisons, and further, it is not easy to predict how many people are going to contradict the law. We cannot have such an insular view. The department is part of a government, of the South African government. If it is an impact on the Department of Correctional Services, surely we have to assess that. Surely we have to look at that, or any other department for that matter. But we cannot look at this in isolation and in as insular a fashion as we're currently doing, and that's where the regulatory impact assessment certainly comes in. Chair, on page 31, the last page, the comment is made, and it just comes back to one of the comments that I made right at the beginning of this questioning session, where Peninsular Immigration made the astounding comment that no foreigner should be granted South African citizenship. And the department has responded that this is a major policy shift and that it would require thorough discussion. Why not all the other major policy shifts? Why not all the other major policy shifts? Thank you, Chair.
Not sure whether to let the department respond or let the Honourable Marcella come in, because most of the questions that were raised were explained. Can I give Honourable Marcella to ask his questions?
Chairperson, on the, I know this was also somehow responded to, but it's just that we didn't have enough time to deal with it. The clause 15A of the bill, which is the section 23(1) of the Act, that decreasing the validity period of asylum transit permit from 14 to 5 would make it increasingly difficult for asylum seekers to gain access to refugee reception centers. I've asked that question, it was well responded to, but without being satisfied because of the time as well. I think the challenge here is that some of these people will end up being victims of arrest and deportation. It will be in that manner because the time given does really impact in the manner in which these people have to gain access to the country. If they do not have enough resources to get to the offices, and I've explained the issue of South African rent. If a person needs a rent or money to travel from point A to B, and the minister then says, no, even if they have to catch a lift, it won't take 5 days. But I know the reality is that you go to these offices as well, trying to check how many people are there who are going there for a third time or in a week. People have been chewing in those offices without getting any assistance from the department. So that then presents a very difficult situation in trying to deal with the asylum seekers. The other area, Chairperson, is that you've got this system that we are always complaining about, that asylum seekers are not getting the kind of help that they need as and when it is required. So because the system is not perfect, then the regulation or the kind of legislation that we are creating will create more problems in those who have to be served by the system that we are dealing with, that the system that is that has to serve them. Now, the other issue is that you'll find that many people, because before they get the permit, they've been to the office for more than just a week, but 2 weeks or so, but they're not getting the kind of permits that they need from those offices. Now, if we're saying 5 days is not enough, I'm not sure why somebody else would say it is enough if we're talking about the same centers in the same country. The other issue is the issue around the pre-screening that is envisaged to be taking place at the borders. The challenge around the pre-screening is that you've got a problem now where officials at the refugee reception centers, I'm talking about the RSTOs, who do not have experience that is required to undertake such responsibility of ensuring that they interview these people, ask the correct questions, and investigate when the responses are made, and obviously ensure that they make the correct decisions in that process. I know we just dealt with the refugee amendment bill, which somehow would be able to address these, given the panel that will be established. But what happens now is that we don't have a panel that will be at the border. There will only be some officials that will be seated there, and one will doubt the kind of experience that these people have as to whether or not the kind of judgment that they will make will not put the South African government at risk, obviously with the neighboring countries. And I would have hoped that the international cooperations as a department, international relations and cooperation would have brought into the party, so that we don't create a situation where all the countries that we have to deal with in the neighboring states now have to take the burden that South Africa had to take initially. And the other situation, Chairperson, is that to the department, people will not have the right to appeal, because immediately you can't come in there. It's either you come in or not, but you cannot appeal because you're outside the borders of South Africa. But if this process was allowed to take place internally, as it is the case right now, then we will be able to avoid some of many litigations that the South African government has to go through. And the department is currently paying so much money in trying to deal with lawyers, in trying to deal with court cases, and this will add to the already burden that the department has. And I don't think I want to be too smart about, no one can be too smart in trying to predict what will happen, but we just need to be honest about it, that it does happen, and trying to bring a holistic approach in dealing with this. Let us do away with the pre-screening at the border post, or find a way that will make it more understandable to people like myself and the stakeholders, and including the public that we represent. There's a particular case which I'd like to bring to the attention of the department, of Mr. David Kikomego, who's 42 years old, from Uganda. And this is a report which is very clear. When a mistake is done by the RSTOs for on an individual that applies for the asylum seeker status, and then the asylum is somehow rejected, and an individual is deported, we have such kind of implications. This individual was deported to Uganda. When he got there, he then faced a criminal, I would wait say. Yeah, when he got to the country, he was facing a treason case against him. Now, you know what that means. This person had the rightful case, but the people who were interviewing him didn't ask the correct questions, and they didn't know how to deal with him. And now he's now in prison in Uganda. And who knows what is going to happen to him. Prison is a very serious case. And if it then becomes a situation that this person is hanged, as it is the approach in Uganda, if you are found guilty of such offenses. So the official who was dealing with this person is sitting here, and there's no recourse for the individual who came into a safe country and who had to be dealt with accordingly as an individual who sought asylum. So this case, who knows how many other cases that are actually similar to this one. There was a Dutch official who was chased around by officials in Cape Town, and he had to go to court, and he didn't succeed in the manner in which he had to appeal his judgment. Now, the situation here is that we need to find a balance in order to ensure that some of these amendments can assist us better as a department in ensuring that the way we operate does benefit those that we need to serve, not the other way around. Thank you, Sir President.
Thank you, Honorable Marcelo. You're saying, what did he do in his country, the Ugandan?
If I may say, the politics, the political situation in Uganda is not as smooth as we hope. What happened is, this story is told much better than I can tell, but what happened is that the gentleman has described himself as the chairman of a South African Democratic Party, DP, which is an external wing of another political party in Uganda. So what happened is that there was a persecution, political persecution, which led to them fleeing the country, finding a safer country, and South Africa was that country. Now, when he got here, his case was not properly heard, and now he had to be sent back home. That is when he faced this kind of judgment against him.
Mr. Mackay, I'm not sure if you want to respond to some of the questions, because some were answered by the minister. You will respond to some with your team, of course. I'm not saying only you should do it.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the issues raised by Honorable Member Nasella, I think we are in agreement, Honorable Member, through you, Chairperson, that we are going to relook the process at the border, the pre-screening process. I mean, Minister had also said we took note of the concerns that were raised, and that we will relook that. So that we will come back with a with a redrafted amendment on the issue. And I think the process is that we come back to the portfolio committee, honorable member, if we have made changes to this to present again. We are not aware of this case that you are talking about, honorable Nasela, on David Kigo, or I don't know what his surname, but surely when he was in South Africa, he went through a process. You would go through the process of being your case would be adjudicated, and when you are your case fails, you have the right to appeal, and it means that you would have gone through the appeal process and you would have failed the appeals process as well, and that would only then would you be able to be deported. So I'm sure there was due process in this, and we could not be held accountable or told that it was a full more in any way because it went through the due process. Chairperson, on the other issues, on the reduction of the transit asylum permit, I think that Minister has dealt with that. I'm not going to go into it. And all the other issues that I think that was raised by Honourable... could I forget now? I'm so sorry. Honourable Lovemore, my apologies, Honourable Member. Except one chairperson that I am a bit confused with the input from Honourable Lovemore, and maybe if it could be spelled out because I don't understand it. Firstly, Honourable Lovemore says that we do not have a migration policy when she started off when the minister was here. And then Honourable Lovemore says that we are shifting from policy. So I don't understand that. And I also don't understand what she means by shifting away from policy. I would argue, and the bottom line of the CDE's input is that we don't have immigration policy, and we beg to differ with that. We have, and it's based, our act is based on it, on our immigration policy. And there are some issues raised by CDE that we have encapsulated that is in here. But, Chairperson, I would just remind the House, if I may, Chairperson, on the preamble of the Act, of the Immigration Act, it sets out our policy in terms of our immigration policy. And all that we are trying to do here, Chairperson, with regard to the amendment of this Act, which is based on this policy and the preamble, is to deal with certain loopholes that we have seen developing and the abuse of our Act that is based on the policy in the preamble. And that is all that we are trying to do here. We are not moving away from policy. We don't think so. We are trying to strengthen and make sure that our Act keeps to the maxim that our minister says is important and that we should keep high, and that is we've got to maximize benefit and we've got to minimize risk to this country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Can you talk about one question
we could ask? Are the gurus not going to say something?
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may start. The issue with regard to the CDE, I've gone through the submission just now. We've mentioned them, I think it's once, but the issues that they're raising, I'll give example, I've got their submission here. They're talking to clause 15, which we're dealing with. They're also talking to clause 23 that we're dealing with. There is also issues relating to clause 12D about the critical skills, the prescribed requirements, 12B, 12D, national interest, what will be in the national interest, the economic sectors, under clause 13A. And those are issues that were raised by all other members of the public who made the submissions, clause 11, 13A, and 7C. So they are mentioned. Perhaps the only mistake we made was we did not mention them in all other areas where they appeared, but there is a mention of them in the submission. It's not that we completely ignored their submission, and as indicated by Mr. McKay, he did mention part of that. The issue with regard to the transitional provisions, when a law is brought into operation, the principle in South Africa is we don't bring a law operating backwards, you go forward. But if the law introduces new requirements, the transitional provisions will cater for those things that you want them to be in transit for a particular period. I'll give an example with one particular a case where, if, for example, an act introduces, establishes a body, you need to say what will happen with that body perhaps if it has got a term, and there are particular cases that need to be dealt with by that body. So you create that the body might exist for a particular period until such time that those cases are finalized. But in this case, we're saying where there is an introduction of a new requirement, a person who already possesses a permit under the current requirements, that permit would continue to exist until such time that it expires. If you need to extend it for a further period, then we'll apply the requirements because the term for which it was issued for under the particular requirements expired. So we allow you a period until that point. So transitional provisions are really necessary where there are issues that you want to put in transit. But if there's nothing that will transit, for example, there will be cases about spousal relationships that we had come across some years back with regard to the Immigration Act, then before 2004 amendments. Those cases, when the interviews were done about spousal relationships, they were dealt with in terms of the old requirements, not the new requirements. So that is the difference with regard to that. The issue about the sentences, I think we did say we are going to revise the sentences. And the issue about what is deterrent, for example, one of the issues that we are asking is that we need to interact with applicants. And so in that way, I think the confidence then would be coming back as we engage with the people. Then they'll be able to determine this is the kind of treatment I get from Home Affairs. They will feel the treatment themselves. And, well, arguing about what is deterrent and not deterrent, I think that there will be a lot of issues that we'll take into account. It might not only be the fact that we're giving a high sentence we'll be scared of, but we'll consider on the issues that we're going to revise that. And the issue of regulatory impact assessment, it's one of the things that I think in government is being introduced. As of now, it's we're still gearing toward receiving training in terms of how it should be introduced. I think National Treasury, the President, should be driving that to ensure that all departments are on par in terms of when a law is changing, what needs to be taken into account. I think we are getting trained in terms of how it needs to be applied broadly throughout any particular process of legislation. I think Mr. McKay, the issues of how we are going to catch people who are on board domestic flights, I think it's something administratively that will be addressed also. The process about when we go back and say we're going to revise and we're still consulting, for instance, with DTI, for example, before the committee deliberates, I think we will put before the committee the clauses that we said we are conceding, we're going to revise, we're going to forward the redraft of the version that we currently have. And I think when listening to members making comments, somehow picked up that we are saying this is the bill that members of the public made comments on, then we consider them. Then we are saying we are going to revise, we're going to do. But I think there was a bit of saying we have been pinned down on what we said, for example, Section 15. Yes, we agree, as it is now, it's direct and limiting. But we did say we've taken into account we're going to balance. But the questions still come back on us pinning down only particular issues. So I think that's what we would ask, that we be given time with the consultations we are having and the input made. We are going to revise and come up with a provision that says this reflects the discussions we had and the consultations we have come up with. I think Okay. The other issue is, I think, the issue of a person having the right to appeal. That is applicable wherever you may be. Any decision that is taken against you or contrary to what your interest might have been, you are able to still apply for an appeal, and there are processes that we engage in. We can give example with a person who applies for a visa outside the country. If the visa is declined, you obviously need to question in terms of what were the issues, and you'll be where outside the country, then there's a process that we'll engage in. So it doesn't bring really the difference that you should be allowed to come in the country to appeal, because the Act itself does say how do you lodge that appeal and how it will be processed. Thank you.
I don't take it up.
Chairperson, just three things. First of all, the regulation-making process, etc. And I think we all know the legislative process in this regard is you do the legislation, your bill, an act. I understand that the honourable members indicated we'd be legislating in a vacuum. I think that's debatable. But once the act has been passed, it's then that you finalise the regulations. Yes, we can start working on the regulations in tandem, but it's not that we bring it to the portfolio committee to finalise the regulations here, because we can only implement the regulations, obviously, once the proclamation is out and the act is an act of parliament. So the main idea here is to get the bill finalised so that we can then finalise the regulations at the end of the day. That's just on the legislative process. The second issue that I want to indicate is, Honourable Masela, is the issue of the 14 to the 5 days, etc. We've raised this previously, I think, when we dealt with the Refugees Amendment Bill as well, is the issue of administrative issues vis-a-vis legislating for inefficiencies of the department. If you draft legislation, you do not legislate for inefficiencies. And what you mentioned there is that people come to the refugee reception office, they can't be assisted, etc. So the five-day period might become a problem. Those are administrative issues that the department would have to look into then, if that is the case. But it can't stop the process from going from 14 to 5 days. I'm just trying to say that the basis is you don't legislate for inefficiencies. We want to move forward. The third thing that I just want to mention is that there's been mentioned that the department's paying a lot of money for litigation fees, and the amount mentioned is 6 billion rand, etc. I just want to make it clear that 6 billion rand has been mentioned relates to contingent liabilities. It's not litigation fees. I just want to make it clear. And contingent liability, it's not things that have materialized. I mean, it might materialize at the end of this based on certain things that happened, but I just wanted to put that straight. Thanks, Chairperson.
I'm sure have we answered all the questions, I hope. Honourable members, time is against us and we travel by public transport. Honourable Masela, I hope you are the last
No, that's the... I'm being very curious about the comments and remarks by Mr. McKay on the policy, migration policy. I must say, all the stakeholders that we met earlier, all the stakeholders that we met, Mr. McKay, through you, Chair, in the week ago, they were saying that had we had a migration policy, all of them would say, if our migration policy, I'm saying yes, if there is one, then it should be made available to public so that people can have access to it over the net. Because what is happening now is that, to my understanding, there was a white paper which was dealt with early 2000s. And that white paper never really got through the processes where it got passed through the parliament processes. So if there's any policy, then we should actually be debating in line with that, but it must also be there for everyone to access it. So my understanding is that there is currently no policy to find wherever you want to check it. And this is a point of clarity, Chairperson, so that there is clarity, so that there is very clear understanding of what we have and what we have not. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, will you have to respond?
Thank you. Chairperson, if I may, if you read the Immigration Act, and I was not trying to be disrespectful, Honourable Chairperson, through yourself to Honourable Lavender. It is just that I don't understand, and I'm trying to ask for clarity with that. Because if someone says to me there's a policy shift, it means there is a policy. It's as simple as that, and that's what I couldn't understand, Jefferson. Now, if we read the Act, the preamble to the Act, I don't know, did we expect perhaps to have a whole volume, but this is it. It says that in providing for the regulation of admissions of foreigners to and the residence in and the departure from the Republic and for matters connected herewith, the Immigration Act aims at setting in place a new immigration control which ensures that a temporary residence permits are issued as expeditiously as possible and on the basis of simplified procedures and objective, predictable, and reasonable requirements and criteria and without consuming excessive administrative policy. Sorry, capacity, my apologies. Security considerations are also fully satisfied and that the state retains control over the immigration of foreigners to South Africa. Interdepartmental coordination and public consultations enrich the functions of immigration control. D, that economic growth is promoted through the employment of needed foreign labor. Foreign investment is facilitated. The entry of exceptionally skilled or qualified people is enabled. Skilled human resources are increased. Academic exchanges within the South African development community is facilitated and tourism is promoted. It also says that the role of the Republic in the continent and the region is recognized and that the entry and departure of all persons as ports of entry are efficiently facilitated, administered and managed. The immigration laws are efficiently and effectively enforced, deploying to this end significant administrative capacity in the Department of Home Affairs, thereby reducing the pull factors of illegal migration, and that the South African economy may have access at all times to the full measure of needed contributions by foreigners. And then I, that the contribution of foreigners in the South African labor market does not adversely impact on existing labor standards and the rights and expectations of South African workers. And J, that a policy connection is maintained between foreigners working in South Africa and the training of our citizens. It also talks of to the push factors of illegal migration may be addressed in cooperation with other departments and the foreign states concerned, and that immigration control is performed with the highest applicable standards of human rights protection, and that xenophobia is prevented and countered, and that a human rights-based culture of enforcement is promoted, and that the international obligations of the Republic are complied with, and that civil society is educated on the rights of foreigners and refugees. Now, these are policy statements, and this is what this act then was based on this preamble. Now, when we as a department said that we are going to review our immigration policy, we said we needed to review it because this policy does not take into consideration economic migrants of a low and unskilled, at the low and unskilled level. And our immigration review of the policy would mean that we would need to look at that because that sector is not catered for in this act and in our policy. And that was the need for a review of the policy, not that there is a hiatus or that there is a vacuum and there is no policy on immigration. We are still working on this one over here. And if there is a need for a review and a total relook of this policy, then we need to go on to that. But it is an act that is based on these policy statements that are here, Honorable Member. And that is the only thing that I was trying to illustrate. Now, if what we are saying here in our bill is a move away from these policy statements, and then we would say that indeed there is a shift in policy. And that is all that I was trying to illustrate, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you.
Where is our parliamentary legal advisor? Do we have somebody here?
He just left, he has other engagements.
Oh, he hasn't participated?
No.
At all?
Okay. He will be participating, but he was here. And I'm sure in our next meeting he will be participating, because we do have our state law advisor here with us. Maybe you want to ask or seeking clarity question. No, he's just, you know him, he was just here, Honorable Lasmo, yes, yes. On that note, Honorable Members, I think we have exhausted the, yeah. And I would like to thank our guests who are here and others have long left, but at least they made time to be with us and contribute, you know, and be here to the minister. And Grace, you're welcome. I'm so sorry, my apology. We have our new member here, she will be one of our portfolio committee members. And we have our visitor, Honorable Sithole. On that note, Honorable Members, I need to thank you, and the meeting is adjourned.
Very important. They made me sign the one for this too.
Okay.
Anyway, let me find where I should sign here on Monday.